Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday morning, Wednesday, November the 1st, 2023. We now are into the month of November, 18 minutes past the hour, 30 degrees, and mostly clear skies here in the Marion area. Want to get to the program quickly here this morning because there are a lot of things going on in the community now that we are 6 days away from Election Day coming up on Tuesday, November 7th. For many of you who listen to the program on a daily basis, you know that last Thursday morning we had Adam Wickham, the superintendent of the River Valley School District, on talking about the levies, proposed levies for the November 7th election in the River Valley area. And this morning we wanted to have one of the candidates on for River Valley School Board coming up on November the 7th, Cody Higley, to get his perspective on things going on in the River Valley area and why he wanted to run for school board. Cody, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
Cody, let's just start from square one here. Why did you?
I'm going to ask you one question, though, Scott.
Oh, go ahead. Go right ahead.
It's of supreme importance. Yep. Have you got your Studebaker radio yet?
I'm so glad that you listen. That makes me feel good. I do not have my Studebaker radio. Isn't that depressing?
It's very depressing. I mean, it's just that retro style. I love it. I love it.
I know. You know, it was that or a jewelry gift for somebody for Christmas. So, you know, I don't know. I'm conflicted. That's my big decision to make before November the 7th.
Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Cody, I appreciate that. Why are you running for River Valley School Board?
Well, I'm a graduate of River Valley. I was actually the last class to graduate from the campus on 98. Attended Waldo Elementary. And overall, I had a fantastic experience, you know, during school. And somebody that went on to undergrad and grad school, so I value education. The other thing, I'm somebody that really values transparency, fiscal responsibility, and accountability. Now, those are all, you know, relatively fleeting notions in today's day and age, but, you know, you can sit around and you can complain about things, maybe have opinions, and you say, oh, they're not doing this, or you can try to do something about it. And you know, I looked in the mirror and I said, you know, I want the very best for the school district. I also want to weigh the interests of the other stakeholders in the district, including the taxpayers. And that's the job of the school board. You know, when these public school districts like River Valley were originally founded, I mean, they were founded as, you know, one-room schoolhouses out in the countryside in villages like Caledonia and Clarendon and Waldo and Martell. You know, they would, one of the first things they would do is erect a schoolhouse. So they valued that. Our ancestors who, you know, built this land, you know, that was very important for them. And that was one of the first things that they would do, but you know, they would structure it to where everybody had a stake in it and everybody was contributing. And also, you know, they had that local oversight. So you would, around the turn of the century, you know, there was all a township board of education, you know, so we've kind of gotten away a little bit from that close connection, I guess, to our school district for a lot of us. Not, you know, not everybody. I mean, there are certainly people that are within the nexus and intimately involved, but, you know, for majority of people in the district, I think that they would agree that there is a lack of transparency and communication and collaboration. And that was apparent to me this last election cycle, which was in May, you know, the off cycle, you know, special election. There wasn't really any awareness within the community, a relatively little amount of awareness for the levy initiatives in the school district. You know, they had the voters narrowly passed also during a May off-cycle election in 2019. That's when the district's 1% income tax was passed by voters, and it passed by something like 100 votes. And the turnout was about half. Historically, May elections, you know, any election other than an election held in November is going to have a turnout of half or less than half of what a November election is going to have. And it narrowly passed. It was a 5-year, 1% income tax on working residents only. So only if you have earned income. So if you have wages, salaries, self-employment, that sort of thing. Well, in May, they said, well, we're going to try to extend this by 20 years. And I thought, man, that's a little bit crazy to run it in May, not really have a big public awareness campaign. You didn't see signs in the district. You know, there wasn't mailers sent out. There really wasn't a whole lot in the way of awareness. And I said, that's not right. That's not the way to go about it. If you're asking for something as a publicly funded institution like a school district, you know, you need to put all your cards out on the table. Make everybody, all the stakeholders, aware of the need and the ask and what it means. The other part of that was on the bond and permanent improvement. The ones that are expiring here were passed by voters in the year 2000 and were used to construct the new schools. I put new in quotation marks. Well, what campaign they did do was a series of YouTube videos that were posted on the district's website. And again, that's about it during that campaign. And they, you know, stressed that 6.08 mils are expiring, so we're going to ask voters for new levies for a bond and permanent improvement in the amount of 6.08 mils. And then it was no increase to the tax rate. Well, Scott, when you hear that, what do you think? When somebody says no increase to the tax rate, what do you or the average person, I know you're more astute than most, so what do you think when you hear 6.08 mils, no increase to the tax rate?
Well, I think most people would say that their tax rate is not going to go up if you believe what's being said.
Right. Well, you can have no increase to the tax rate, but because the valuations in the year 2000 are significantly lower than what they are, the property tax valuations in the year 2023, you're going to, yeah, there's no increase to the tax rate. 6.08 does equal 6.08, but the net impact in what each taxpayer is going to pay is going to go up substantially. And the other component with that, that the district didn't put out there, again, I'm all in favor of supporting education. That is our primary mission. I want to do what's best for our district's children, the quality teachers that we have, and I want to take care of our investment, which are these school buildings that we built. But I want everything out on the table. And another thing that wasn't really shared in that campaign is that this, when the state of Ohio implemented its income tax in 1971, they had to get buy-in. So they had to do some wheeling and dealing. One of the wheeling and dealing was a non-business tax credit or rollback of 10%. And then later on in that decade, they passed an additional 2.5% owner occupancy credit. So they said basically, in exchange for this new income tax that we're implementing in the state of Ohio, we're going to give you a break on your property tax bill. So we're going to give you, if it's a non-business, we're going to give you that 10% reduction on your property taxes. And then if it's owner occupancy, if you live in your house, you're going to get an additional 2.5%. Well, in 2013, the state of Ohio removed that, those two credits. So any levy passed after 2013 is not going to receive those rollbacks. And again, that's something that should be put out there. People should know, that way they can make an informed decision on the net impact to their families. Because we have seen a substantial increase, in particular over the last 5 years. I mean, everything, inflation is bad. Cost of living increases and property taxes are no exception. So if you have a residential property in River Valley District, you can check the math yourself. You can go on, you can look and see what your historic taxable values, assessed values are, and what your tax bill in this district has increased 50, 60, sometimes over 60% in a matter of 5 years if it's a residential property. Now, that doesn't mean that River Valley is receiving 60 or 65% more in property taxes, because when the state, again, the state is doing this. It's not each school district, you know, scheming in a smoky cigar, you know, back room or something. The state of Ohio reduced their tax rates on vacant property. So examples would be, you know, all these farm fields that we have around here. And they made the decision, agree with it or not, that we're going to reduce it on those types of properties. So compared to 5 years, you know, it's 10, 20%, some cases a little more than 20% of a reduction on these vacant, you know, farm properties, which predominate, you know, in a rural district like River Valley. Meanwhile, if you have a house and it's your primary residence, you know, you're paying 50, 60, 65% more. So in that environment, you have to really be sure that you are as transparent as possible and that you are, you know, I guess, pinching every penny that you can and making sure that you're not asking for a penny more than you absolutely need.
Now, when we come to those three issues that you had talked about, fiscal responsibility, accountability, and transparency, and there being a lack of those things in the River Valley School District, who does that fall on in 2023?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's all stakeholders. You know, you have to have a desire on the part of the residents and voters to be involved. You know, that's the only way that our system works, is if people actively participate. And they demand accountability, transparency, and fiscal responsibility. So, you know, because when you look at our district, River Valley's, you know, roughly 17,000 people. You know, they all are important. They all have a role within, you know, our representative government. And if you don't have them actively participating, then, you know, part of any problem is on them. And that includes me. It also is on the school board. You know, the school board, if you look at the voting record of the school board, which again, you can access that from the minutes, you know, it's pretty much been year to date, you know, through June when I went through all the minutes, you know, it's been kind of a rubber stamp board. And you know, I think there's 397 approximate votes cast, and there were 397 yes votes. And then each agenda item that gets voted on has a, you know, section where it says discussion. and there was no discussion on any of those 97 odd agenda items that were brought forth by the administration. So now, to their credit, I'm sure they would say that we discuss things before and then we go into the meeting and we vote on it. Okay, but that's all part of transparency. Again, you want all cards on the table. You want that discussion. You want to see what each school board member has to say about a particular subject. So, you know, and then if you look, there are a lot of very close connections between the school, some of the school board members and, you know, some of the faculty. So then there's a question of any type of conflict of interest. You know, those can be mitigated, but there's definitely, you know, some accountability on behalf of the school board. And the same goes with the administration. You know, the administration is in charge of the everyday, or, you know, day-to-day operations of the school district. So, you know, it needs to be where you, as a school board, you are deferring. You're not deferring, but you're saying, okay, we're bringing in this administration, so superintendent, treasurer, so on and so forth, and we've got the educational professionals, the teachers out there. So we want to empower the teachers because they're on the front lines. And, you know, they're actually sitting in front of our kids day to day, doing the best job that they can. So you, as a school board, rely on the administration to make sure that the school is running smoothly, that the teachers are doing their job, all that sort of thing. But then the school board is there to make sure that you're keeping an eye on the administration and you're looking out for not only the district's residents, but also the district's taxpayers and other stakeholders. So to answer your question, kind of everybody.
Well, let's run down the list here. Now, when you say that current school board members have connections with staff members, what are we talking about? Friends? What's
marital, familial connections.
Oh, so some of them are married to staff members?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So again, you can mitigate that, you know, but currently it's 3 out of 5. So if you're saying, you know, as far as a controlling share of the board, you know, it's kind of difficult. Let's say they did recuse themselves and you got 3 members recusing themselves on a particular issue and then you've only got 2 board members left. So, you know, it's a very, I guess, questionable topic. I'm not saying that there is impropriety, but, you know, you want to make sure that you have an objective, honest assessment that, again, is looking out for all stakeholders, the kids, the teachers, and the property taxpayers and other residents in the district.
Now, when we talk about Superintendent Adam Wickham and his administration, what grade would you give them at this point?
Well, I mean, River Valley is performing. When you look at the state report card, you know, it got 4.5 stars out of 5. So from the state's performance assessment, River Valley's doing a good job, and it always has. It's always been a quality school district, and that's something that all Vikings can have pride in. Now, what are the deficiencies, I think, are on the transparency and the involvement with the other stakeholders, you know, tax-paying residents of the district, you know, putting everything out on the table. It's just like the projects here that are planned. Now, the district has not, to my knowledge, it's not on their website. I haven't seen anything on their social media presence. You know, they're mailing things out, you know, soliciting people to pass the levies. But there's been nothing in there as far as, okay, this is a itemized estimate for each of these projects that we have planned to use these, you know, $10 million bond funds, and $4.625 million, I believe it is, on the permanent improvement levy. I don't know about you, Scott, but if your house has repairs that are needed, and you've determined that, you're like, okay, my house needs a new roof, it needs a driveway, it needs this or that, are you going to just ballpark what you think, or are you going to go and get multiple estimates from contractors? Once you get those, and I'm sure that they have. I know I'm not accusing them of just ballparking on their own and just arbitrarily asking for X amount of money. I know that they have put that in there. I just want it to go out. I want it to be provided to the district residents so that they can look and they can say each item, okay, so this is what they're saying they're going to do for the roof, or this is what they say it needs, this is what their plan is, and this is the estimated cost. I'm not saying to guarantee that we're locked in or anything like that. No, you put estimates. That's what an estimate is. People understand that there are market fluctuations with an estimate. So I'd like to see that, and I think that's all part of increasing the transparency and that line of communication between the school district and the taxpayers. And the same thing with projected repayment costs. So like when we passed $19.6 million was our portion back in the year 2000 to build the new schools. The federal government, because of the issue with the old campus, they chipped in, I think it was $22 million. Well, you know, that $19.6 million bond that they issued, you know, comes with interest. So the interest that was accrued on that was something like $13 million off the top of my head. So, you know, I understand how the issuance of bonds work, and there again that you can't, you know, say for sure, because those probably won't be issued until, you know, after the voters approve it, obviously. But you could also put in, you know, an estimate, like based on current market conditions, or, you know, if we secure it between this range and this range. Again, the more information that can be provided, the better. And I think that the school district, you know, needs to work on that.
So based on everything you just said, what would the grade for the administration and Superintendent Adam Wickham be as of today?
Well, I'm not gonna grade. I mean, honestly, I actually was talking with, I've been talking to a bunch of different property owners and residents, parents in the district, and, you know, I hear various complaints or concerns and praises. I mean, there, you know, there's a lot of each to go around, let's put it that way. And, you know, one thing I'm thinking of is, I said, hey, you know, have they ever sent you like a parent survey where you can give your feedback? Have they ever asked you to grade the administration, the teachers, the curriculum, the overall experience? You know, no. So I'm thinking, you know, if the state can come in and do an annual grade card on a 5-point scale, why don't we give that opportunity to our district's parents, you know, and solicit that feedback, and then in an anonymous way. I mean, it doesn't have to be identified when they give their, you know, results back or whatever, but, you know, we need to increase that, because I have heard a lot, and there are things that need to be improved on, and it'd be nice to see, like, how do the parents, how do the district residents rate the school district?
So as we head in with less than a week to go to the election next Tuesday, River Valley will have two issues on the ballot. Voter turnout is expected to be quite large in regard to two big state issues coming up, I think driving the vote this particular time in this off year. As a person running for River Valley School Board, do you support those two issues, and will you be voting in favor of those?
I mean, that's outside of the scope of what the school board, you know, when you're on the school board, you've got a variety of people, you know, so whether or not you support either of those issues is irrelevant. to that position.
Well, when it comes, I think, though, to voting on a school board member, I think people are interested to know if you think these are good ideas, what has been proposed by the district. I mean, we talked about transparency, and I think this is a transparent issue. As somebody who lives in the River Valley District, as you say.
Well, I think that both are deficient in the way that they were structured. I think that there's a lot of money being, you know, pushed into those campaigns, and I do not think necessarily that they were structured in a way that is going to be fair or advantageous to the voters of Ohio.
That being said, if they both go down next Tuesday, as Superintendent Wickham, and I know you heard that interview, said when he was on last Thursday, there would be several things that would have to happen in the district that would not be advantageous to toward the student. Reductions in staff.
Oh, you're talking about the... Okay, I was misunderstood what you said. I don't know if it cut out. No, as far as the income tax and the bond and improvement levies, is that your question?
Yeah. Do you support those? Would you vote for those?
Oh, okay. Well, okay. On the bond and permanent improvement, you know, it's one thing to come and say, like, okay, this is what we're going for, like, go to a levy meeting. To my knowledge, again, there was no solicitation of, you know, feedback from various stakeholders as they were formulating the options for the levy. It was just kind of said, this is what we've decided on, and here you go. Well, they could have structured. Now, I would look at it, again, that's why it's crucial to say what are the various projects and the different estimates at this time, you know, for all these planned projects that you want to use the funds for. So, they decided just to, this is what we're doing, and we're putting it all together on one particular issue. I think that, you know, I probably would have made sure that I've done my due diligence on my planning and budgeting and other respects to make sure that I'm not asking for any more than I'm going to need, and that what I am asking for is, you know, absolutely necessary. Something, you know, something like the roof. Something like the driveway is, you know, quite pitiful, the parking lot out there in a lot of spots. So, I mean, there's definitely a need. Does every project on there absolutely necessary or needed? That's my question. You know, could you split it? Could you have split it into, you know, more than one measure? I think that that would have been something to consider. Again, we don't have that transparency and that information on what exactly is, you know, part of those planned projects. On the income tax, in the course of my campaign and doing research, not only into River Valley, but into, you know, this north central Ohio, so a multi-county region, something very concerning, you know, I discovered that really hasn't been out in the public as far as declining enrollments of all these school districts. So if you do a comparison of 10 years' time and you look at the Department of Education headcount numbers and so on and so forth, you see a fairly substantial decrease. Well, when that happens, Scott, these districts are getting less money from the state. So unless they do proportional cuts in their budgets to offset the decline in enrollment, then they have to come up with the money somewhere. And what are they doing? Well, some of them, like River Valley, are going after an income tax. When River Valley structured its income tax, they excluded it to workers, so people with earned income, so wages, salary, tips, bonus, commission, self-employment. So those individuals in the district have to pay it. If you do not have earned income, you do not have to pay it. So they've limited the spread of that financial burden to just that one segment of our district. So if you look and you say, well, is that normal? Well, it's normal if you're in Marion County, if you're like, you know, Elgin, Pleasant Ridgeville. But an income tax overall out of the 600 and some school districts and the public school districts in the state of Ohio, only 34% have an income tax on top of a property tax. So then I looked through and I said, okay, of that 34% that have an income tax, so we're already in the minority of school districts overall in the state of Ohio, of that, how many limit it to workers and those with earned income? And it's only 30%. So the way that they structured their income tax is the minority of the minority. And there again, if you're going to say that this is our public school district and we want to make sure that everybody has skin in the game, all these stakeholders, you know, have a vested interest, then they probably could have looked into, you know, other options with that income tax if they absolutely needed it. The other thing is, if you're running a business and your sales have declined, you know, by 10-15%, you should probably not be increasing your expenditures and your hiring and other things. You should probably be tightening your belt a little bit. So those are all considerations, I think, that should have been made before, especially with the feedback from all the stakeholders and solicit that input before they decided to move forward as they have. But unfortunately, it wasn't, so it's back on the ballot.
So that being said, just so we get this clear, so nobody's confused who's listening to this interview, do you support those issues, and will you be voting for those as a prospective school board member next Tuesday?
I am much more comfortable voting for the bond and permanent improvement levies at this time, since they will be, you know, those levies that, you know, were passed by voters back in the year 2000 to construct the schools will be expiring. And there is a need of our infrastructure, and we want to protect those. I would have liked to have had that information put out there so we know our overall liability and what we're doing with it. But, you know, since you're already at this point with the other ones expiring, I can see the reason to go ahead and support it. On the income tax, you know, that was passed in 2019. It's 5 years. So there's no reason that, you know, they can't revisit it. You know, they put that back on, take a break, renew it, or, you know, take another look at it. And if they have to make some changes, then go to the voters, because that's not going to be expiring here in December. So on that one, I probably, now, you know, you can make, that's the beauty of it, Scott. You can say, like, well, if you don't do this, X, Y, Z is going to happen. Well, you know, a lot of times we find out when those threats are made, in reality, there are alternatives. And it just is convenient to say, because, you know, you put that out there and people are like, oh my gosh, if I don't pass this, then, you know, this is going to happen. So I know the game, and it's not just River Valley. That's just how government works in a lot of ways, is using those types of tactics. So I think I would probably say on the income tax, I would definitely, you know, I'm not saying that income tax isn't, you know, a viable option for school districts in theory, because it does, you know, spread that burden around and get that input from all, you know, stakeholders, or more stakeholders than just a property tax does. So, but it needs to be structured in a way that is fair. And I'm not saying that it would have to be at 1%. I actually think if you took, I've done some, you know, calculations, again, you'd have to, you know, perfect it and stuff. But if you had, you know, a reduction of 1% on earned income, and you could probably lower it to about 0.2% if you had it applied to all income types. And when you're talking, you know, what a normal household income is, you know, even for a lower, it's going to be, you know, 50 cents, 75 cents a day. But those are things that I think need to be looked into. And there wasn't that buy-in, and there wasn't that campaign to solicit feedback when they planted. They just put it in front of you and say, this is what we're doing.
Now, for people who have said on social media, because on your social media campaign page, there has been some debate. Now, some people support everything you say, but some people are critical of some things you say, I guess such is life. If somebody says who has a student in the River Valley District who is going to be voting, who lives in that district, who's going to be voting on November 7th, says, how can this person who's running for school board, who is not supporting both issues on the November ballot, who is criticizing the administration for fiscal responsibility, transparency, accountability, how can we put them on the school board? Your answer would be?
Because you need that. You need that advocate for all people. I am 100% in favor of promoting the primary mission, which is educating our kids. It doesn't mean that it's a blank check. It doesn't mean that you don't ask questions and demand accountability. That's what you need. That's what this country needs more of, Scott, is people, you know, watchdog groups. We don't have it anymore. You know, where is the Fifth Estate? Where is, you know, this local journalism? You know, it used to be in this country, you know, cities like Marion had 3-4 newspapers, you know, and everybody participated, everybody read them, and they focused on local issues. They were locally controlled. We don't have that anymore, you know, or very a shadow of its former self. So you need, at the local level, you need somebody that's going to go in, that has good intentions to support the schools, but who also is going to do their due diligence, research every issue, not just delegate authority, not just give a rubber stamp or a blank check. You know, you need that. You need that kind of oversight, and that's what I offer.
Now, when we look at this on the whole, why do you think you have been met with some criticism and some argumentative responses on social media? Because this, in lieu of newspapers and journalism at this point, being what it is because of financial cutbacks, is how people go to people, get to people, express their opinion.
Well, you don't, you know, it's like anything else. Like, they like the way things are currently running. I think that if you don't have people looking over your shoulder and checking your math and asking questions and holding you accountable, you're probably going to like that. You know, you're going to say, oh, I don't have to worry about it. You know, if I do something wrong or we get on the wrong path, like, nobody will really know. Nobody will really care too much, you know, especially if you have your institutional support networks, like, solidified. So having somebody that is saying, look, I am here to do what is best for the students in our district, and also to consider the impact to our taxpayers, then that's like, oh, wait, we don't control him. We don't, you know, have that type of influence. It's outside of our institutional network. That's a threat. So then you're going to get pushback on that. You know, but there are people. It's just, you know, I'm in finance. So I see the impact. I hear the stories of people coming in every year that they have their escrow accounts, you know, reanalyzed for their property taxes and homeowners insurance, you know, and their increase in their payments and the impact that it has on them. They say, well, Cody, you know, this taxes went up, homeowners insurance went up this year by this much, last year went up by this much, and I got to pay it. And when you look at the bill, you know, 50-60% of your property tax bill is going to your school district. So now I'm, you know, you have to look out for those people too. You have to say, you know, any of these asks have to be, you know, documented, substantiated, and, you know, as close to the penny as you can get it, so that we can put no more of a burden on these people, because I see it, you know, and you look at consumer spending, you know, and household consumer debt, you know, is at an all-time high. Consumer spending, you know, is down on, you know, normal, like, discretionary type spending. People are spending more money on just cost of living and things. So you need people to look out for those people too, and to try to come to an agreement, and again, make sure that you are supporting the kids and the teachers, but you're also looking out for the taxpayers.
And now when it comes to the students, and do you have a student in the River Valley School District?
I do not, and most majority of our district residents do not. Same thing with district, you know, leadership, do not. So, no.
Right. I guess that being said, and I did not know the answer to that question, but for somebody who does have a student in that district, can you see why they would want these issues on November 7th to pass, and maybe say, well, you know, because the rap has been for a long time on people who don't have kids any longer in the district, or who don't have kids at home, or who don't have kids at all, that they don't see it like somebody who has kids who are benefiting from programs and who are happy with the way things are?
Well, that's their right to vote and to make those decisions. It's the same thing with people. You know, we have a wide variety of stakeholders. And again, we are a public school district. So it's not a, you know, private institution. It's not a private club or anything like that. It's a public school district. So, you know, you have to involve and take into account the wants and the needs and the considerations of everybody. And, you know, as far as somebody that has a child in the school district, obviously they're going to want the very best. A lot of them are going to be property tax payers, either through the income tax on workers or through, you know, the property tax. So they have a balance of issues as well. So, you know, you want somebody that's going to be there, that's going to be advocating reasonably, you know, for all parties, and, you know, making those decisions. But as far as each household, again, that's why I think it's crucial to put all your cards out on the table and then let everybody review the information, what is planned, what's being done, and let them make that decision.
Very quickly here, because we just have a couple minutes left, and I wish we had more time on this issue, but open enrollment is a big issue and has been in Marion County for over 20 years now, with five different school districts, Marion City included in that, that you can send your child where you want to send them, but when it comes to voting on those schools' issues, levy, bond issue, whatever they might be, income tax issue, you don't vote in your child's district, because you live in a different district, and that is why it has become so hard to pass these issues. And I believe, according to Superintendent Wickham, that River Valley at this point has the biggest open enrollment of any school district in Marion County, I believe over 400 students. That would seemingly cause a problem when it would come to voting.
Well, it certainly does, and, you know, it also, it's not a necessarily a good sign of our area's demographics as a whole. If you look at the decline in the past 10 years of student enrollment numbers, you know, for this entire, you know, multi-county area here in North Central Ohio, should be very concerning for folks. And then you look, they're battling for open enrollment to students and to some extent, you know, because they want to get those state funds. Now, I think that, you know, from a passing of a levy or other type of, it does detract, you know, if you're not living there and you're not paying those taxes, you know, it's going to be, less likely that you're going to, you know, be a diligent advocate in your home district. Now, not to say that all of them aren't. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of them that are bleeding blue and gold that are currently residing in other districts, but I think as a whole it probably does detract from that. So, you know, that's going to continue to be a challenge as we see these larger, like, demographic issues, you know, likely continue, at least in the short term.
Final question here with a minute left to go with the election coming up on us in less than a week. What do you tell people who say he's critical of the school district, he's not even all in on both of the issues coming up on November the 7th? There have been these back and forth on social media about he doesn't agree with this, he's being critical again. Why do they vote for Cody Higley for school board?
Well, I mean, if you're content with the situation as it is, you know, then I guess if it concerns you that somebody dares to, you know, stand up, and I'm not, you know, I'm not spouting off at the mouth, Scott, and I you know, I think the implication in that question is kind of that. All my research comes from the Ohio Department of Taxation, the auditor of the state of Ohio, Ohio Department of Education, and the audits, you know, of the district. So we have those resources made available to district residents. But how many people reference them? How many people look at them? Well, if you have somebody that does look at them and they compile statistics from those sources and they source where they got their information, and you just point out things, factual things, you should not say, oh, how dare that person do that. You know, we need people to be asking questions. 100 years ago, we would have had, you know, the Marion Daily Mirror and the Daily Star, you know, doing articles and breaking things down, and every household would have subscribed to that, and you would have had that awareness. But we don't really have that anymore, unfortunately, or a lot of us don't. So if you have somebody that is out there, and like I said, just posing the questions, but because it is a potential threat to have somebody that isn't controlled, you know, I have no ties that can be used to bind my arms by the district as far as, you know, that goes. So you have literally a Mr. Smith goes to Washington, you know, I guess Cody Higley goes to Caledonia type situation. And if you've seen that movie, you know how that ends.
And you know what? I think we all can agree, everybody can agree on every issue next week on the ballot. Do your homework. An informed voter is a good voter. And I think we all can agree on that. Cody Higley for River Valley School District. Cody, hopefully we hear from you on election night, and I certainly thank you for coming on this live program and having this discussion. I think it's important.
I agree, Scott. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and make sure that you play that Studebaker radio extra loud.
Hey, thank you, Cody.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to The Talking Place.